This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're at in the U.S. and around the world. Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box with your host, Pete Caliendo. I am thrilled to be here today. Another great day. Thanks, first of all, to ESPN Honolulu for joining us. We just joined their network, and we're thrilled to be there. So thank you, everybody, in Honolulu, Hawaii. Also, don't forget, go to YouTube, Peter Caliendo. We're streaming live. We're also streaming live on Facebook at Peter Caliendo. So check that out. If you got any questions for our guest today, go ahead and just write it in the comments section. And again, I want to thank everybody in the U.S. and around the world for what you do to spread the show. We are in over 100 countries. So thanks so much. And listen, today we've got a great, great person on the show. Let me tell you, I watched him play here in Chicago. What a pitcher, incredible, three-time All-Star, two-time 20-game winner, a Cy Young Award winner. He was the fifth-round pick in the first round of the draft, went to Stanford. I mean, we can keep going on and on. Just, you know, he was a competitor. I love watching him play. Let's welcome Jack McDowell, known as, what is it, Black Jack McDowell?
That's still the thing, I guess, yeah.
It is. Welcome on the show, man. I really appreciate it because I know you're busy. You got a lot going on in your life, and thank you for joining us today, man.
All right. Hey, good to be here.
Hey, I guess we'll start with, because our audience is from all over the world. Let's start with the Black Jack McDowell. How did that name get to you?
Well, I think Hawk Harrelson just started calling me that, and, you know, haven't found the game or seen the game where he decided to use that, but I'm guessing that because I was the ace of the White Sox staff, so Ace and Jack equals Black Jack. So that's where that came from.
Love it, love it. Listen, the other thing, you and I talked off the air, Jack. You know, we've got a similar friend in some ways. You know, you were on Team USA at the age of 18 years old, but another great honor. I've been lucky to be a national team coach. Just to wear that uniform, represent your country, it's just a thrill. And I want to give a shout out to my great mentor, rest in peace, 4 years ago, passed away, a great friend and mentor. Again, I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for him, Coach Dick Birmingham. And I know Coach Birmingham was one of your coaches on Team USA. Tell our audience what it was like to, first of all, you know, obviously you were a big time player coming out of high school and college, but still to be able to represent your country, what was that feeling like?
Oh, it was very cool. Very cool. And I think a lot of times, I was drafted in 1987 as a junior at Stanford. And I knew that the 1988 Olympics were coming up. And that was one of the kind of bounce back and forths for me. And I look back at it and I go, hey, that was probably a mistake that I made signing rather than going and winning a gold medal. You know, that would have been very cool to do because I've always been a player that really, you know, yeah, individual stuff, great. Yeah, whatever. You can always do better in baseball individually. You're never going to have a top level individual year that you can't improve upon. Mm. But the only thing that you can reach the highest level that you can't go any higher are winning championships. And so that's the thing I always shot for. So it's kind of a bummer that, left that gold medal behind.
Yeah. And, you know, and sometimes it is timing too, because, you know, all of a sudden now fast forward, you got the World Baseball Classic. And, you know, at first it was a little difficult to get players to play in the Classic at the beginning. But once they got involved and you're representing Team USA and you're playing the best teams in the world, you know, a lot of the major league players, you know, started to say, hey, this is pretty cool. To represent your country. And I think one of the greatest players to ever play a game, Michael Jordan, said it perfectly. It was the greatest thing that he's ever done in his lifetime. And think about what he had done in his lifetime, and being in the Olympics was, you know, one of the greatest things he's ever been able to do.
Yes, it's a very cool thing for sure.
So now take us, because, you know, it's interesting now you're coaching, but I still want to stay with your, you know, you become a first round draft pick, you know, in the first round, you're the fifth pick. Kind of talk to the players out there, because, you know, there's a lot of players that hear about the draft and all that, you know, the expectations, you know, what you had to go through. Everybody thinks it's glory all the time, but it had to be some tough times too with those high expectations.
Well, it is. And, you know, actually the draft happened when we were at the College World Series. So interesting, you know, and a lot of the White Sox, when I first met them all, were like, yeah, we sat and watched you in the College World Series after we drafted you. And the draft day is the day, the only game that I lost in the College World Series. I don't know if it was the exact draft day, but the first game that I pitched after being drafted, Oklahoma State beat me up before I got to beat them in the finals. So this is the guy we picked in the first round. Wow, that was crazy.
And that was that with Ventura on that club?
Yeah.
In Oklahoma?
Yep.
Yeah, then later on that you get a chance to go play with Ventura.
Yeah. In fact, you know, the following year he was our first round pick with the White Sox. And I gave him a call right away and I said, hey, listen, you know, I know that you don't know what the heck's going on when you come to spring training, what's going on. You know, that's how I felt last year. That's why I'm giving you a shout. Come live with me. We'll get a place together so we know what's going on. And that's what we did. And we became roommates for a few years doing that and traveling in the big leagues too.
You know, now you're in the big leagues and you're competing at a high level. What was that like the first time you pitched in the big leagues?
Well, it's crazy because I don't care who you are. Once you get there for the first time, when you walk into a clubhouse, it's absolutely nuts because you walk in and you go, okay, I've got that guy's baseball card. I've got that guy's baseball card. I used to watch that guy when I was a kid. That is so nuts. It is a very crazy thing to finally get there. And I always talk about that part of it. And then the next step up is walking into the clubhouse, your first time that you're an all-star. And you walk in and you look around and you're going, okay, this is just full of Hall of Fame dudes. This is nuts. I'm on this team. That is just crazy. So, yeah, you just definitely a mental push to, you know, step up and be able to not try to do too much, not worry too much about it. Just go out there and try to compete.
You know, you speaking about the mental part, that's an interesting point. You know, baseball, no matter what, you're going to fail more times, especially as a hitter, you're going to fail more times than most sports. And so it is a mental game in a lot of ways. How did you deal with that? You know what, so maybe some advice, because I know you're coaching now also, you've been coaching a while, you coached with the Dodgers. I believe you coached, you coached in high school a little bit too, right?
Yeah. I've done every level. I've done T-ball all the way through pro ball.
Yeah. And so you've had to deal with kids that fail. What's your message to them, how to deal with it? Now you had to do it at a high level with, you know, 40,000-50,000 fans in the game. But you know, kids have to deal with their parents there too. What's some advice there?
Yeah. It's just trying to explain to them the game. And guess what? You know, you're going to get out 7 or 8 times out of every 10. Everybody is, you know, and that's going to happen from now all the way through Major League Baseball, if you get there, buddy, it's all the same.
Yeah.
And I tell them as a pitcher, hey, yeah, great. I won the Cy Young. Well, super. You know what? I lost 10 games that year too. Hmm. That's what I always talk about, individual success versus team success. You work on the team success because that's the only thing where you've reached something and you can't achieve anything more in that year.
Now, speaking about team success, where did you learn or when did you learn to be a teammate? Was it, you know, in high school? Was it in college? Where did all that start? Because, you know, a lot of times we are individuals and, you know, we're competing against somebody else, even though they're our friends. But where did you learn that team aspect?
I think, you know, just from watching my brothers play growing up. My brothers are 7 and 8 years older than me. So, you know, I used to just tag along with them. Every time dad would go hit them ground balls, I'd jump in, you know, batting practice, I'd jump in. And watching them play kind of taught me all that. And my brother Jim won a national championship at USC in 1978. Wow. And I watched that, you know, I got to actually leave school and fly to Omaha to watch that. And that was one of the things. And then, so that always became a huge goal for us was championship.
Yeah. And growing up with your brother, where, you know, I want to go back to your young years too, because I'm looking at now, you know, baseball's so organized at all levels, you know, and we got young kids at 8, 9, 10 playing all year round, you know, but you know, you don't see them out at the park on their own or in the backyard with their friends. Did you have that experience with your brother competing in the backyard with your buddies? How did that help?
Oh, a little bit. I had a bunch of guys that I played with, and I speak about that all the time, that the one thing that we did as youth players in our front yard was we played pickle.
Yeah. Okay.
And the more I have coached and thought about that, that is a one single drill that teaches more baseball things than any other possible drill you can do. So if you're in youth baseball, you should have guys play pickle. People go, what are you talking about? Why? Well, think about it. It's about base running.
Yeah.
About your sliding. It's about, once you slide, look and see if the ball went past the runner, you know, past the defender to move on to the next base, to keep going back and forth. And then as a defender, it's all about making a good throw, catching the ball, no matter where the throw is, moving to catch it, moving your feet to make a tag. All these things are involved in that game of pickle, and it's not played anymore by kids. And the other part that is crazy is pepper. We played pepper in my backyard all the time. And that's how you become a good defender. That's how you get back control. To me, back control has, the idea of back control has absolutely disappeared. And boy, if they had it now with the shifts, what a joke. You know, hey, let me just take a half swing and just hit a little lazy ground ball over there. The whole side's open. You know, I don't, and they're like, well, they can't do that these days because this and this and this and this. I'm like, oh, boy, you needed to play pepper growing up, dude, because that would have been real easy for you to just stick the bat. And funny thing is, I'll bet you could put a bunch of pitchers from the 90s in there to do a fake bunt pullback and just hit a little chop, you know, to beat the shift. And there's just certain things that all that stuff that we grew up with actually taught great things and gave you the head start of a lot of things.
You know, and that brings up a great point, because I love what you just said. You know, the game is changing, and I think eventually it's going to go back in some ways. It's going to make a long turn back.
And they are figured out, Peter. They definitely are.
Exactly. They have to. And if you look at the teams that have gone to the World Series and won the World Series in the last 3-4 years, even, they are teams that have hit the ball the other way, that have hit it balls in the gap, you know, that make more contact
and actually steal bases, like in, yes, in, you know, try to score individual runs rather than trying to wait for a home run.
Yes,
and ways to play the game, man.
You don't see the bunting as much. You don't see, I mean, hit and run. I think hit and run's pretty much, you know, I don't even think they have a sign anymore for hit and run.
Hit and run's tough. I've never been a big fan of hit and run because you're counting on so many different things to happen perfectly. So that's why, you know, that's why I think that has disappeared pretty good. The one funny thing, I was watching an old video, a game of mine the other day facing Seattle. And there were two perfect bunt base hits off of me in 1992. Who were they? Who bunted base hits off of me?
1992. I mean, boy, it's not Brett Butler.
No. Mm-hmm. You want to know who it was?
Oh, yeah.
Griffey and Edgar Martinez.
Wow.
The best hitters in baseball. But in that situation, in those games, they were down by a few runs and needed to start an inning. They made a perfect bunt, started the inning with a leadoff single. Hmm. That's how baseball was. You know?
Well, speaking about that, talk about, you know, what do you like about the game now, and maybe what do you dislike about it and why?
Well, all the things that keep changing are frustrating all the players from my level. I am a big base stealing type coach and manager. I think base running wins and loses games so many times and isn't taught anymore very well. I mean, last year watching the big leagues, I'm like thinking even the coaches coaching the bases don't seem like they're helping or ahead of the game. Sometimes you're, as a coach, you're going to get a better read and a quicker read on hits to let them know down, 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 that the ball's going to be down or up. And I just watch these guys sitting there and not knowing what's going on, or not knowing first and third, and the guy in third gets in a rundown. You get to third base, dude. I saw that about four times last year in the big leagues. I'm like, wait a minute. They don't go over that to discuss, hey, guess what? You know, if we're first and third and there's a ball hit to third and this guy gets in a rundown, you just go to third because you're going to get there, period. You're going to get there. If you don't get there and they throw and they try to get you out, guess what? This guy's running and scoring. I mean, there's certain things that just aren't taught anymore that I just go, God, you guys need to be doing this. Base running is so important. And all these things, baseball-wise, are the reason why I haven't done a lot of pro ball stuff, because I know I'll just be targeted as a pitching coach.
Right.
And the other stuff is what I'm more of a fan of. Baseball itself, the game, is what I'm a fan of.
You know, and that's another good point, because here you are, you know, big time pitcher, you know, and you're coaching. Now you got to learn the other parts of the game. I don't know if you learned them while you were watching the game also, you know, when you were a player, but it's got to help being a pitcher, help with the other aspects of it, knowing what the runners are going to do. Where did you learn that, I guess, to teach the base running?
Well, I mean, I was a two-way guy going into Stanford. I was a shortstop pitcher. You know, Everybody recruited me as a shortstop pitcher. So, you know, I knew the game, respected all of the parts of the game. But the thing that I think about is, as a pitcher, I definitely know the running game.
Right.
One of the reasons, you can go look at the 3 years I was in college, we had a ton of stolen bases with a very high percentage, because I've got a good feel for when the guys are going to throw over or not throw over, or when they're going to throw their breaking ball or not throw their breaking ball. Mm. And, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, that's what's frustrating about today's game. They think that everything is projectable before the game even starts. Yet baseball is a pitch-to-pitch adjustment game at every level, every position. It's pitch-to-pitch adjustment, you know? And they don't allow that anymore. It's like they don't see it. They just kind of do what they do. You know, and it's the adjustments and this and that, and making an adjustment with two strikes in your swing doesn't happen anymore. And certain things, you know, this guy has a nasty this type of pitch, so maybe I should shorten my swing up if I get to two strikes and he's trying to get me out with it. There's so many little things that I think would help that have been chipped away at the game, you know, that I still teach, you know, try to teach to the dudes that are here.
Yeah, you don't see the Rizzos of Chicago, you know, even with, like, he goes with two strikes, he'll choke up and, you know, he'll shorten up, he'll do something different. You'll see him hit the ball the other way at times. As a pitcher now, with our coaches, that's another point you brought up, was the pickoffs, as far as, you know, it's base stealing. What do you teach your runners to look at? You mentioned counts, knowing the counts and knowing pitches that they're going to throw. What else do you look for in order to work your base stealing?
Okay, that's a great. I've never been asked that question yet. I teach it differently than everybody. Love. Most people teach, look at the back foot, right? Look at the back foot, because when he throws over, that back heel's going to move, or that this and that. What I teach is, watch the pitcher before you get on base, and what is his first move when he starts going home? There are a lot of pitchers who, they come set, and their first move is their glove moves before their knee moves, okay? And so look and see, is he doing that and then throwing the first ever? You know, okay, no, he'll just throw to first from there. But when he's here, and say, we'll say his first move is his knee, well, then you look at his knee or look at his glove. You look at whatever the first move is, that's what you study to get your best jump.
Love that. What about the guys? Talk to the players on the bench, you know, because a lot of players, you know, they don't pay attention, or at least they're not taught to pay attention till they get up the bat or till maybe they're on deck. But you can do that a lot earlier.
Oh, absolutely. To know, you know, take a look at what kind of sequences they're throwing in. And here's the funny thing I always joke about now. the pitchers from Little League on are getting their games called by the coaches.
Yes.
Well, guess what? Don't you think it's probably easier to watch a guy's pattern, a single guy who calls every single game for everybody, watch what their pattern is? Because pitchers have their own individual patterns, so that'd be a little harder to figure out. You'd have to see them more and more than to try to figure out a coach's pattern of throwing stuff, for sure.
A lot easier, I would assume. You know, what about with your runners? What runner gave you trouble, and what did you do to hold runners? You know, you had different pickoffs or whatever you did to kind of keep them closer to the base and maybe not moving their feet.
Well, it's all a timing thing. You know, working on a quick move was important, of course. I wasn't a big slide step fan. I still am not a big slide step fan. Everyone wants to use that almost every pitch now, and it is not a smart thing. Slide steps were only meant to kind of be a right-hander turning into a left-hander. So it's a guessing game, you know? Oh, we have the steal on, boom, he slide step. Oh, now what, you know? Right. Where the left-hander, sometimes he'll lift his knee and throw over to first, sometimes he'll lift his knee and go home. So it's really a guessing game. It's not a read thing. It's a guessing game with a left-hander pitching. And with the right-handers who have slide steps, it should be a guessing game. It shouldn't be, I'm going to do this every time and lose command, lose my rhythm, lose, you know, velocity on my fastball and strength, and, you know, kind of chip away at my arm because I'm throwing with just my arm. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but you see it all the time now. It's just slide step, slide step, slide step.
Yeah, and the same, I'll back up a second because I wanted to ask you this. You mentioned about calling the game. You know, it would be nice to see young kids get more experience at calling the game, but there's got to be a progression, right? You got to give them a chance to try it. Then they got to learn from the coach, I'm sure, because the coach can help them out. How do you deal with it? How did you deal with it in high school and also in college?
Well, I ended up calling most of the games in high school, and the college level, I called a couple games, but I didn't want to do that. I wanted to teach the kids, and some of them were getting frustrated that I wasn't calling their game, you know, and some of the coaches were getting frustrated at me for not calling the game because, like, that's going to be important. We're going to win games. It's like, no, I'm teaching these kids how to do it themselves.
They're so, looking at winning
only. Like, I do a bunch of individual lessons now with kids. And the one thing that I teach them is this. All these coaches now want to play the video game. You know, you're just one of their video pawns and they're going to call the game. And so when you come, you know, you're going to get up there and you don't know what pitch you're going to throw until you see the catcher do it. So you don't have a lot of mental preparation, pitch adjustment. So what you need to do, and I try to teach all the kids when I throw side days with the kids that are pitching, I say, okay, every pitch, you have to look at what the end is going to be. Okay. See where you want to throw the ball. Okay, I'm going to throw a fastball away. Just see it in your head. Boom. See it hit the catcher's glove. Now you have a little mental preparation before, because, you know, you can't just see what the call is, step off and go, okay, I'm throwing a fastball away. Here I go. But if you're, you know, a regular pitcher calling your own game, you throw a pitch, boom. Now it's 2-1. Okay, I'm going fastball in right here. You know right away. You've got all this time with the catcher throwing the ball back, you getting ready for the next pitch to have that in your head and get ready. But calling a pitcher's game doesn't give them mental preparation unless you teach them something about mental preparation.
Yeah, I love that. Folks, we're talking with Jack McDowell, Black Jack McDowell, 3-time All-Star, 2-time 20-game winner, Cy Young Award winner. You know, he was with the Yankees, but well-known with the Chicago White Sox, spent a lot of years here in Chicago. And what I love about Jack, and folks, if you know him, you know, he's a straight shooter. He just tells you what he thinks. He doesn't beat around the bush. And I think you love coaches like that because, Jack, you got to believe as a player, let me ask you, because you, being a straight shooter as a player, didn't you want that manager to be strictly honest with you? Or did you like the guy that kind of beat around the bush in some ways because he didn't want to offend you?
Oh, yeah. No, you want to know what's going on for sure.
So your recommendation to coaches on doing that, you know, like, because, you know, it is, especially at times, whether you're cutting a player, whether he's not playing, you know, when I played, I didn't always get the complete truth. And I saw it as a director of baseball operations when I was with in independent ball, we would cut somebody, but we really weren't honest with them why we cut them. You know, we use an excuse of, well, it's a salary cap or whether it's this. And, you know, I'm just thinking, you know what, just tell the young man the truth, because he's got to know it. Now, whether he believes it or not, that's fine, but he's got to know what you're thinking.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Well, that's the thing in pro ball, you know, when I had to call guys in to release them with the Dodgers, it was not my choice. So I didn't have much explanation to, you know, it was kind of a bummer. I was one of the biggest downers of, you know, being a manager in the minor leagues is having to do stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah, because you probably liked them. And then yet, they, you know, the front office, whoever's in charge, didn't want to keep them. We were talking about hitters. And nowadays, there's all kinds of technology. I mean, there's statistics. You can, you know, find out statistics on anything, on what people eat. What were you doing when you played? How did you know how to pitch to hitters? I know you had scouting reports, but did you depend on also seeing a guy swing or seeing video? How did you work with that?
I didn't really watch video much. It was a memory of how he reacted to you and your pitches. And that's the thing that's being tossed away as well, is some games you're going to go in there and have a great off-speed pitch. Sometimes, a couple innings are going to be a little shaky. So it is a pitch-to-pitch adjustment. And it was funny because when I was with the Dodgers those 2 years, the first year was all the old school guys running it. Okay. And then the next year was the year they made the transition with all the Tampa folk coming in with all the metrics. Mm. And so there were a lot of questions, a lot of things being told, and a lot of back and forth. And I asked them when they were doing all these shifts and all the different things, and they had Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke as their top two pitchers. And I asked them, I said, hey, I'm just interested to know what's going on up there. You have the two best pitchers in the game right now. Are you asking them, okay, how are you going to pitch this guy? Where should we play him? Or are you telling them, this is what you have to do, we're going to be doing this? I said, no, we have all the metrics and numbers. We're telling them, you know, you have to pitch him inside here because we're going to do this and that. And I'm like, okay, then you don't really understand the game and you don't really understand pitching. Okay. Mm. Because to be a star pitcher, you have to be able to make adjustments along the way. You aren't just throwing perfect. It's not a computerized game where, oh, I'm throwing a fastball inside. There it is. Bing, fastball inside. If it was like that, Peter, you know that, we'd all have zero ERAs.
Right.
If you could do everything perfectly that you wanted to do, there are adjustments you have to make during the game from pitch to pitch, from batter to batter, and that stuff is not measurable. It's not measurable, and so – in the metrics heads, things that aren't measurable don't exist. That's not real. It doesn't exist. Just like, you know, clubhouse being together and being a team, it's not measurable. So apparently that doesn't exist either.
Yeah. And that's probably the most important part of being a team, right? Being a teammate, you know,
not measurable.
Having each other's backs. And I always wondered about that, because when you're putting a team together and here you are, you're at Queens University as the head coach, and you got to put a team together. That's another great point. When you're looking at players, yeah, we want talent, but what's more important, or just as equally as important than the talent aspect?
Yeah, it's getting guys who want to come in and learn and want to come in and win, you know?
Yeah, how do you measure the winning part? You know, the heart, the, you know, the hard worker, the guy with great character, you know, that even though he's competing against somebody, he still wants his teammate to do well. You know, how do you find those guys?
Yeah, it's tough to know. You know, when you're recruiting, you know, mostly all you're seeing is videos of guys. And, you know, I wasn't in college long enough to be able to develop a ton of relationships with high school coaches to trust them to go, hey, what's this guy like? That is probably the most important thing. Is sure, you're gonna watch a video of a guy and say, okay, he looks pretty solid, we can go get him. You'll look at his numbers and look at that. And that's what you're recruiting on for the most part, because you're not able to go watch guys across the country because they're playing the same time you're playing. Yeah. You know, sometimes you see them at games, but it's kind of ridiculous to go watch a single game and watch a position player or a hitter and you think you're going to get something out of that. That's the one thing I learned about recruiting was, sure, if you're going to watch a pitcher or a catcher, you're going to get a lot of reps to be able to watch a guy if you go to one game. But if I go to watch a hitter in a game, I want to see how this guy swings and plays the infield. Maybe he gets one ground ball. Maybe he gets two ground balls. Maybe he gets none. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get maybe three at bats. Okay. Boom, he's hit by pitch. Oh, he's walked once. Well, wait a minute. That's not showing us anything. Right. Or if the pitcher that he's facing is not a quality arm who is going to move on to college, you know, you're going, okay, so what is he going to be, first team all batting practice? Or is he going to be able to be a dude? You know, yep. So it's to the recruiting part is, you know, interesting and tough. Most of it, I think, comes from relationships with the guys that are going to send you players and trusting them of their knowledge of being able to watch a guy for a few years.
Absolutely. Hey, folks, thanks for joining us. We got a lot of people on Facebook. I know we got a few questions. We'll get to them. Hey, Jack, you know, the other part is, here you are. You're coming from playing in the big leagues and playing at a top college like Stanford. Now you're coaching college baseball. What's the toughest transition? Because of, you know, you pitched at a high level and now, you know, you're seeing some guys maybe that are struggling or maybe not doing as well as you think they should be doing. What's tough about dealing with that? And how do you deal with it?
Actually, Peter, just so you know, I'm no longer coaching at Queens. I started the program, went for 3 years, and then I stepped down last year.
Gotcha.
Kind of moved on from it. But, you know, the tough part, I think we've covered all the tough parts, is not knowing what you're really going to get until they get there. And, you know, I seemed to get a lot of backlash at stuff that I was teaching. I didn't have a very positive coaching staff with me. That was my biggest problem.
That's important, right?
I gave opportunities to, you know, guys that, you know, wouldn't have got it from anybody else. And I thought they'll probably be cool. They'll come in and want to learn stuff also. Won that way. And so that was the reason why I kind of was like, I'm done with this. This is not good.
But that's interesting because, so if you got advice for young people who are going to get in, whether it be high school, college coaching, you know, one of them obviously would be, you know, make sure that you hire your staff and that they're people you know and trust that are going to have your back. What other advice would you give young people that are going to get into coaching, especially as a head coach?
Get off of YouTube and watching all these drills that they're doing. You know, all of these indoor drills are making guys less and less overall baseball efficient. And the best practice that I do, and I do it at every level, and we learned it at Stanford, okay? Mm-hmm. And Dean Stotts ran this practice at Stanford. And I, since then, and I can explain why it's the best practice to do at every level. And it's Coach BP, but live. Okay. Every swing, you're able to cover 10 games of situations in about an hour because there's no walks, there's no strikeouts. Every pitch is put in play. Okay. And something happens, you're running the bases. You're making plays, you're doing, and as a coach, you sit there, boom, if something goes wrong on that play, you go, hey, stop, how about this? And this is what we needed to do here, guys. This is what we need to go. Okay, go. You're getting batting practice, you're getting real fielding practice. It's like you're playing, you know, a game, but it's not a baseball game where you're having to sit there out there as a defender for 10 pitches before a ball comes out there. Every ball comes out there. That is the smartest baseball practice to ever do because you cover every angle, everything of baseball during that time.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, you had some great coaches at Stanford. I know Mark Marcus was one of the head coach, but, you know, and there's been great coaches in Stanford for many years. You know, and one of the things traveling the world, you know, I've been lucky. I've been to Cuba, Latin America a lot, all over the world. And I see a lot of young kids that play on their own and they get instincts, they develop instincts. And that's what you're talking about, right? Because kids nowadays just don't seem to have the instincts for the game because they're not allowed to just play the game once in a while. And like you said, yeah, we got to stop, make, you know, explain maybe something was incorrect, but now we'll do it again. But consistently doing it and playing it, because you don't see that. You see too many, I guess in some ways, just too many individual drills.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same thing also, hitting in cages only and doing all this cage work. And the funny thing that, funny, kind of a little frustrating and kind of something that people need to be aware of when you're in the cage is let the kids know, line up home plate and show them. Yeah, when you crush a ball right off the cage, right there, boom, boom. If you listen to everybody who's a coach in the cage, pitching, batting practice, hey, go straight away, hit it to the back net, hit it straight away, hit it. Well, guess what? If the ball's inside, crush 2 feet right to there, but you got to know, is that fair or foul? So if I have a batting cage, I'm taking tape and I'm taping a line up there that says, this is fair. You hit it right there. That's fair. That's not a bad hit. You just crushed a line drive. Just because you didn't see it go any farther than 3 feet away from you doesn't mean it's a bad thing. So, you know, it's the same thing. Back control and adjusting to where the pitch is, not just swinging as hard as you can. You know, and a lot of people talking about hitting now talk about, well, your finish. Finish means zero. Your finish means nothing. Your finish realistically has to do with where the pitch is and how you have to go get it from your swing. Because your finish from pitch that is upper thigh inside is going to be a heck of a lot different of a finish than a down and away breaking ball you got to go get. You know? And so those are the things. You can't just hit off a tee and hit front toss and just swing as hard as you can and think that that is going to translate to actual baseball.
You know, and that brings up, because earlier you talked about, you know, we're getting away from hitting the ball different parts of the field because of the shift and all this, and they can't hit away from the shift. Yeah, what happened to hit the ball where it's located? You know, if it's located outside, try to hit it the other way, right? I mean, if it's in the middle, that was the game for a long time, and guys did it really well because they were trained that way when they were younger, and that's what I'm worried about. We're not teaching bunting at the young levels. We're not teaching hit the ball where it's pitched. Nobody says you can't hit the ball hard everywhere it's pitched, but hit it where it's pitched, no?
Yeah, it is. That's the way you're going to square a ball up.
Yeah.
Down and away, and you try to take your big swing, guess what? You're either going to miss it or it's going to be off the end and it's going to sting your hands, buddy. You know, that's how you got to stay through the ball away, and it's going to be a way different swing than just swinging around like they'd like to do now.
You know, it sounds like maybe Jack McDowell needs to open his own baseball school, you know, in your area, wherever you're at, because, you know, you got some great ideas here, and I really like what you're talking about. How do you deal with, you know, technology in some ways can help, and we know kids, you know, today, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, kids like technology, so it can be used for a benefit. I agree that it's being used a little bit too much because kids want to, you know, hit a ball and then they want to look at their stuff right away. You know, but it is fun for them in some ways to use it. So how do you balance it? Does Jack McDowell like some technology, or we should just eliminate it all?
Well, you know, the technology, the thing is, there's ways to use it that they aren't using it in the big leagues, and I'm like, oh my God, put me in there. Let me show you the things that you can do with this technology. So they're just starting now. I think a couple of years ago, they started bringing in guys to be the baseball metrics in between guy that the metrics guys talk to him about, and then he'll turn around and explain the baseball part of it. As I was saying things like, you know, you're doing these shifts in the outfield, and okay, now you can measure exit velocity, launch angle. And guess what? How long launch angle is going to show you how long that ball is going to be in the air. So if you look at the paper of just, oh, the guy hits it to right center. They're all just straight lines. They aren't measured by exit velocity and launch angle. Mm. And so they shift them over there. And meanwhile, I tried to tell the Dodgers guys when I was there, I was like, do this. You do that, but guess what? He hits only, 10% to left center. So you're going to put the right center over here because there's so many more to right center than left center. But guess what? If you measure this, and these are lazier fly balls, 80% of them are lazier fly balls, yet these ones over here are line drive doubles. Your outfielder can get it and still be moved towards left center to take away the hits, but still go get these balls.
Those other ones, yeah.
That's the type of stuff that can help. That's not the type of stuff they're using. All they're just using general slam dunk. Here's what we're going to do on every left-handed hitter. We're doing this. We're doing this shift in this position. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, and it's interesting. You use the word sense. Yeah, I think we need to start using some common sense with some technology, and that's what you're talking about. What about, and I really appreciate your time. You've been on a long time here. I really thank you. What about the velocity aspect with pitchers? Because we all understand velocity is important because it's harder for the hitter to adjust to it. But you also need control. Where's the balance in this?
Well, they jumped into this velocity thing, I think, to kind of fire up everybody. Everybody that played and knows that, okay, the guns are different. The radar guns are different. These guys throwing 100 miles an hour and 102. Go just look at a video of guys from my era and guys throwing today 100 miles an hour. Ain't any different. And I had a guy that supposedly was sitting 98, he would go from 98 to 102 in rookie ball. Yet, I was afraid that he was going to blow a hamstring out as many times as he had to go back up third. And I wasn't the pitching coach. So I was like, okay, I got to go watch this guy and see if he's giving away anything. But I stood in on him just to watch his stuff, Didn't look no different, like going, okay, that just looked like John Smoltz fastball to me.
Wow.
Smoltz was what, 92 to 95?
Yeah.
And all that. It's different radar guns. Right now, they're measuring. You can look the way they measure it, like at a drive line and all that, where you throw it in a net from 2 feet away and they measure it. That's how they're measuring. They're measuring the speed right out of your hand. Whereas when we pitch, it was across the plate.
Yeah, well, that's the most important time, is the crossing the plate.
Yeah. So that there really isn't that much velocity difference. Everyone says there is, but there isn't. And so everyone's just trying to hit the guns, and there's not as much movement on pitches anymore. Mm-hmm. There's not as back and forth. There's not as much up, down, in and out movement, and that it's costing,
No, I was going to ask you earlier and I forgot, when you were pitching and, Jack McDowell didn't always have it easy. Nobody does. And you struggled in a particular inning, maybe walked a guy, gave a home run, whatever it may be. What did you do to get yourself back on track, whether at that time or for the next game?
Well, it's just all about competitive. If you were a starting pitcher back in that day, it was all about being the last man standing.
Mm.
Not let me see if I can get to five innings. If we got taken out after five innings, we'd be crying in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And it was just all about competition, competing. And you know what? The other team's going to try to knock you off the mound. They're the team that decides when you come out of the game, not your coaches, not a pregame analysis of how it's going to work. The other team shows you when it's time to take the starting pitcher out of the game. And so your whole thing as a pitcher was to stay out there and keep fighting no matter what.
Where did you get that from? And I asked that because, not everybody has that competitive spirit. And I'll give you an example. You look at a guy like Mike Tyson, he's a quiet person, but yet he's a killer in the ring. I remember, I mean, I'm just using some guys that I may know a little bit, but I think of Greg Olsen, you know, really nice person, talks easy, but yet he's a competitor on the mound, an unbelievable competitor. Where did you get that at? Because it, is it just homegrown?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I was homegrown because we like to win. You know, my parents liked us to compete and win, and that's kind of the way it all went down.
You know, so on that, what's your advice today to parents, work, you know, whether they're coaching their kids or whether they're at a game watching their kids? What's your advice to them? Because I know a lot of parents can be really tough, but some parents may not help at all. What's your advice there?
Well, the most interesting part that I always bring up about that competition and winning, okay, is what is the first thing in the Little League rule book and all that, and the Little League pledge?
Worth
it. All about winning, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
My goal is to win, and my goal is to play hard and play good against, you know, but be a good competitor and a nice kid, you know. But the first thing in there is, you know, our first goal is to compete and win. And that's what it should be. And being a competitor and competing hard is not a bad thing. It's not, you know, you're not mean because you're competing hard. It's just part of the deal, man.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, you just want to be your best at things. And that's the way kind of life is.
Yeah, in some ways you're right, because how many kids go to a ball game and, you know, their intention is to lose or they don't care. Most of them want to win. I mean, that's inherent. So why not express that a little bit? What about the coaches that are working with young kids starting off pitching wise? Maybe some advice there for young kids, because, you know, we're talking about, like earlier, everybody wants to teach velocity or they want to teach something else, you know, and they're not teaching certain things that really is going to help them at the early stages.
Well, one of the things at younger ages that has become a little frustrating, number one, is 9 and 10 year olds who've only been pitching maybe 1 or 2 years now that play travel ball and they have to deal with runners leading off. So Now, just learning how to do this, how to get my rhythm, how to get, you know, everything going the right way. And now I got to do it different ways and then worry about the runners. And if you look at the base distances, you know, let's use your little metrics here, Peter. If you use base distances, the velocity of a 9 to 12 year old pitcher, even the guys that are throwing really hard, the arm strength and velocity from the catcher to those distances that are a little longer than Little League. And once you have a leadoff, number one, you don't need to do any slide steps, dude. You ain't throwing anybody out. Right. The guy gets first, he is going to steal second. He can just walk to second. Okay. You might be able to pick him off, You know, or hold him, or the only way he'll get thrown out at those ages is if he forgets that when you lift your leg and go, he can go right away. He waits till it crosses home plate like Little League and then go and get thrown out in travel ball. And that's the only time you see it during those ages. Yet all the coaches still want, you know, oh, let's go slide step. No. Don't. Let them learn how to pitch. Get that knee up. The reason we get our knee up as a pitcher is to get the timing down. If we had to throw not on a mound, but on flat ground, we wouldn't be lifting our knees up because it wouldn't really do anything. Oh, it actually messes up. But the fact that we have to go downhill, and by the time you get there, that's why you lift your leg and hit the timing to go, you know, because we're on a mound throwing downhill. And so get that knee in the right place to set up the timing. And the other thing I always teach also is there isn't any perfect way to start. What I do is if I get a kid that I'm doing a pitching lesson with, the very first thing that I will do the first time I see him is roll him a ground ball, have him shuffle and throw. Because what I want to see is when he catches the ball, where does his separation and release come from? Some kids will catch a ground ball, pull it in, and then come up here to throw. Some kids will come here and throw from down here. Okay. that makes a difference. So if you have a kid who's going to throw from down here waist high to get all the way up to here, that's where you want him to start when he's pitching. So he gets down to here, and when he separates from the same place he separates when he catches a ground ball, because that will be the same arm action that's needed, his natural arm action. So guys that start up here, but their separation normally is down there, have that much longer to go and usually are behind where they should be. And so that's a very important thing to teach young pitchers.
What would you start young pitchers off with as far as pitches, type of pitches, and how would you progress that?
Just fastballs, you know. 12, you know, when you get to like 11 and 12, you can start messing with a curveball, but you need to know how to teach it, okay, to not hurt a kid. A lot of the kids you see will throw their curveball. They'll come out like a fastball and go fastball, 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 curveball. That is not good, because you're already in your motion of forward before you twist. So you're going forward and then you twist.
I could feel that.
And so what I teach is karate chop. Go look. And I always show the Sandy Koufax picture of where he has the ball already turned when he's way back here. One of the best curveballs in the game. He's got his hand turned. Okay. Already does it. If you go look it up, you know, probably you go look up with Sandy Koufax pictures, photos. The second one that usually comes up is him with his arm back here throwing a curveball, and his hands already turned. So your hands already turned. So all you're doing is you're throwing a fastball with your hand on the side of it. Okay. That's not going to hurt you. You're just going boom. Okay, that is not going to hurt your arm, throwing a curveball at a young age, if you do it correctly and you teach it correctly.
Yeah, and you know, and we've spoken to Tom House here. He's on the same page as you are. Just make sure you teach it correctly. And you know what? Kids are going to throw it anyway, so you might as well teach them the right way, because everybody wants to throw it.
Yeah.
Jack McDowell, I remember, Jack, if you had injuries in your career in the big leagues, but I'm curious to find out what you did to kind of recover after you pitched, that you were a starter, because some of the things you might have done to recover to make sure you're ready and in full strength for the next outing.
Well, we used to do a lot of work, actually. You know, in a 5-day rotation, the day after you threw would be a weightlifting day and a heavy conditioning day. And I used to use the slide board a lot. That I think is one of the best baseball training mechanisms there is.
Explain slide board.
Slide board is, it's like the hockey thing. It's just it's a board you slide from one side to the other.
Oh yeah. You
know, slippery bottom shoes on they put on, and that kind of recreates every move you make in baseball, whether it's base running, moving to get a ball, pitching, hitting. Everything is 1 foot to the next foot. Balance and push.
Love it.
That, I think, is one of the best overall exercises. And one of the things I try to warn people about now is this maximum effort weightlifting thing that they think is going to get them stronger. Baseball is a repetition sport and an endurance sport, especially pitching. And I tell them, if you're going to lift, don't lift at a weight you can't do 9 to 12 reps of. Okay. And just keep going. That'll get you stronger. And maybe you can go up in weight a little bit as you keep going. Don't just do this. I'm going to max. Oh, I did one. That does not help. That is not going to help your overall strength in baseball. You need to have the loose strength. Endurance strength is what helps.
Did Jack McDowell run a lot? Like nowadays it's more sprinting, you know, strengthening the lower body. Were there certain areas that you strengthened, and did you run a lot?
Well, I didn't run a lot because I had an arthritic hip from the college on.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they told me in college I shouldn't be playing sports anymore.
Wow.
So, no, I'm going to keep going. Keep going. What happens? So I didn't run a lot because of that. So I did a lot of, you know, I did the exercise bike. And I did the slide board, but I did do sprints. You know, the day 2 and day 4 was a sprint day. You know, one and three were the big workouts and the endurance workouts, and two and four were the sprint days. You got that to work on your fast twitch a little bit more.
Were you a long toss guy?
Not as a training mechanism, not long toss, but what I did was I used to throw against a wall. I beat up a lot of baseballs, but I would throw against the wall, and it was for this reason, because I would stay about 20 feet away from it, throw as hard as I could. I'd shuffle and throw, kind of like you can do long toss, but I would be throwing with the correct release point that you want. Okay. And then on top of that, boom, it would hit the wall and you would get a comeback or ground ball. So I would throw leading up to spring training every year. I would build myself up to be able to throw 150 of those as hard as I could. And I would throw as hard as I could, because guess what? When you're not thrown off the mound, you're not straining as much as you are, but you have to build up your endurance to be able to withstand that. And I think that's why there's a lot more injuries now, is they don't let the pitchers build up endurance in pitches when they're going good to be able to withstand a bad start when their mechanics are a little bit off.
Jack, we got about five more minutes. And again, I can't thank you enough for your time. You know, there's some changes happening in Major League Baseball. I did want to address this a little bit. You know, they're thinking about some rules, you know, where pitchers now have to step off.
I saw all that stuff.
I'm for some changes, but I just wonder, I mean, you know, again, it goes back to your base stealing. You know, can't you teach guys how to base steal or how to steal bases? You have to go the opposite way and now hinder the pitcher from not being able to pick off the right way, so that way the guy can steal the base. I mean, what's your thoughts on some of this?
It's just funny, because I looked and I'm going, okay, they didn't explain it out, the whole thing where you can only throw over twice. Okay. So I go, okay, so if I throw over twice now, when I, you know, I'm looking in on it, can the guy just get a leadoff and just stand 2 feet from second base? If I can't throw over anymore, how's that going to work? What are we doing? You know, the people making these rules, these new baseball rules, sitting around a table going, yeah, that's good, let's go with it. Do they even know the game? Because I don't get it. And why understand how the players union doesn't make a backlash on all that crazy stuff that came out? I don't get it, because this doesn't make sense.
I would assume that the players union is going to put a stop to some of this stuff. I mean, it's run by the players. Sooner or later, I mean, they're not going to agree to some of this craziness.
Well, the funny thing was they said, okay, we're making the bases bigger to, you know, oh, we too many collisions. What collisions? I don't see any collisions at a base anymore. You can't take a guy out in second. You can't run over the catcher. So what collisions are we talking to? And it's so, okay, great. And they're saying, but it's also going to help with stolen bases. And so I'm going, okay, let's do the math. Once again, let's do the metrics. Making those bases the way they're going to do it is going to take away 1 foot between first and second, because it's 3 inches wider. Okay. But when you push it to the line, it's going to be 6 and 6. Mm-hmm. You know how much bigger 1 foot is to take a lead 1 foot bigger? Why not just do that, guys?
Right. That's my point.
For a pitcher, you can't tell if the guy takes a lead off and then the next lead off he's 1 foot.
Right.
Closer. So how is that going to help?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I'm wondering about, you know, the big base and also, and let's just hope that the players union has some sense, you know, to say, because it has to be agreed upon the players union also to make these changes.
Well, and making the left-handers and everybody having to step off.
Right.
Before, you know, left-handers. Now that just takes away the left-handers, you know, having, you know, the challenge.
And that was part of the game, right? I mean, it's part of unique.
Cool. You know, being a left-hander helped that part of it, could slow the running game down because it became a guessing game, you know?
Yeah. I do want to take a question, because we had several and I apologize, I didn't get to them. And before I take that question, I ask every guest this, every major league guest, I should say, playing the big leagues. What sports did you play when you were young, before high school?
Everything.
Okay. Love it. How did that help you?
I played in Gray Watt. back in the day, which they did everything all year long. We did softball, soccer, basketball, flag football, the whole nine yards. And then in high school, played basketball, baseball, and football.
And this is a message to the parents, especially. How did that help you? Because, you know, when you're playing multiple sports, there's got to be a great benefit to when now all of a sudden you're playing one sport, baseball.
Oh, yeah. It's just athleticism, you know, working on the different things. It's good.
Yeah, we need that for that. And I want to stress that all the time, that under 12 years old, get our kids, and it's fun. Let them do different things. You know, why focus on one sport where they're only using certain muscles? And, you know, when it's fun to just play different sports.
Yeah, and, you know, the high school coaches now lock out so many kids. Oh, if you play basketball, you can't play baseball for me because you're going to miss this time of practice. Well, you know what? Basketball season was over. We go to the playoffs, you know, and you come back and they go, okay, season starts in 1 week. You better get ready. Here we go. That's the way it works. It's just the way it works.
Love it. All right. I'll take a question. Then we'll close it off with final comments. John Konanuk, here's the question for Jack. What are your thoughts on the White Sox of today in comparison to the teams you were on, and what your impression of Tony La Russa coming back to manage? Big deal in Chicago, Tony coming back. That's a big one right now.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, it's the whole thing. Everything's about projection. How's this looking? You know, I'm going to tell you who's going to win it all and who's going to win this or who's going to win that. You don't know nothing until the season starts, the season happens, and the season's over, because baseball is that type of sport. You can't just write it down and say, this is the way it's going to happen. We did a computer generated thing and this is how it's going to work, you know? So we'll see what happens. You know, it seems like most of the players are fairly positive with La Russa so far. So that's good. You know, as long as he's getting along with them and doing all that stuff. And, you know, I don't know much about the White Sox, how much metrics type stuff they're using, you know, so I'm not sure that Tony La Russa is going to be a metrics pawn to the front office like a lot of these managers are. So that might help too. You know, if Tony's actually bringing old school real baseball and adjustment baseball back into it, I think that's going to be very positive to the White Sox.
Yeah, I don't think if you're in a World Series, and look, I know I didn't play in the big leagues, I didn't coach in the big leagues, and I'm just talking baseball, but, you know, I don't think Tony La Russa is going to be pulling a pitcher who's dominating in the World Series after 5 minutes.
Because the computer told us that he can only throw 87 pitches today, and that's it.
Yeah, and I love Cash. I think he's a great person, great manager, you know, but I get the pressure, you know, from the front office.
That was absolutely not his decision. They actually said that before the game. You can go back and look, and they said only going to throw this before the game.
Like,
what happened to the other team being the team that shows you when the pitcher comes out?
Yeah.
You know? It's just crazy.
All right, Jack, greatest coaches that you coach for, we'll close it off with this, coaches, managers, whoever they may be, or youth coaches, and why?
Oh, I love everybody. Everyone's going to have something to offer for you, you know? You just got to be opened up to what you're being taught. And I tell players all the time, just the same thing, I'm going to be coaching the Burlington Sock Puppets this summer. And it's going to be, you know, college guys. And so the first thing I have to tell them is, if I'm going to teach you something and your coach teaches you the opposite, let me know. Hmm. I don't want to be, you know, I'm not trying to chip away at what your coach is teaching you, but I will explain why I go this route and how I believe it works. And so that's important. So, you know, everyone has a little something to offer.
You know what? I got to tell you, I'm glad you brought that up. The Burlington team, collegiate, it's this collegiate summer league, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm glad, because after spending an hour with you on this talk, you need to be in coaching and stay in coaching, because you got some great stuff, man. Jack, I can't thank you enough. If you would just want any final comments for our coaches in the U.S. and around the world, and then we'll close it.
Yeah, that's why I'm back in. I never gone away from baseball. Like I said, you know, nationally, you might not know it, but I was coaching T-ball in Little League, and I'm helping with my son, my 12-year-old son's Little League right now. And I have an 8-year-old son who's also playing machine pitch. And so I'm helping all those kids with all the things too. And so it's just love the game. I love the game overall and, you know, try to do it at all levels. And it's kind of cool to do it at different levels, you know, because it's a lot easier to jump to a college guy who you can tell something to, and he knows his body well, he knows his mechanics well, and he can make an adjustment and go, oh, wow, that works really good. You know, so it's different levels of teaching.
Yeah, you know what? And I've always said this on the show, when you can teach the real young kids for a good period of time, it makes you a much better teacher with the older players.
Oh my God, by far. I tell people all the time that if I would have just stopped my major league career and became a professional coach, I wouldn't be anywhere near the type of coach that I am now, or have what I believe is decent knowledge on how things actually work, how they progress, and how, you know, you're supposed to teach, and how, you know, what isn't taught as you move up. Yeah. You know what I mean? In rookie ball, going, wait a minute, you haven't been taught this? That is crazy. You know, start way back in Little League, dude. Come on.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, folks, let me tell you, I've had a lot of fun today. This has been an outstanding show. I love what I hear. I love the common sense, but also love the reality aspect of it. Jack, man, again, we got to do this again somehow, maybe in person, because I'm thinking about coming to North Carolina. So I hope to see you. Thanks again, man. God bless you for being, you know, doing what you do. And thanks for being on the show.
All right. Good talking to you, Peter.
All right, folks. That's Jack McDowell. Want to thank Jack again for all his time. We went a lot longer than probably he expected to go. And I want to thank him. So again, special thanks to everybody in the U.S. and around the world. Special thanks to our producer, Brian Kroc, with the Lineup Media Group. Listen, stay healthy, stay safe. God bless you. And we'll see you all on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.